Joining the Colorado Ag News Network and Farmcast Radio once again is Colorado State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg. Once again, we got a great deal to discuss within this month's interview. But first off, welcome back inside the barn, Jerry. And we got a little bit of moisture, but we are still way behind on the drought.
We indeed are. And good morning, Brian. It's always good to talk with you. We got a little bit of snow, about 6 inches or so out where I live. A little less to the west of me, but it's starting to, there's still some remnants of it around. But yeah, we're way short of moisture, but quite honestly, it's about time to start gathering so I can wait for spring rains instead of snow.
Yeah, that's true. However, at the time of this interview, which is the morning of December 22nd, by the way, we've got apparently 2 days of huge high winds coming into the entire eastern plains of Colorado. So we are not looking forward to any wind. After we got that moisture, all that does is dry out the ground. But wanted to move to a huge topic that just happened. It's probably a good thing we delayed this month's interview by 1 day. I know you had some cattle to ship, but Congress overnight passed the COVID relief and spending bill, and according to The Hill, they passed that mammoth $2.3 trillion year-end bill to finally deliver coronavirus relief to fund the government and put an end to the months of roller coaster negotiations and turn the legislative page over until 2021. The bill does include $900 billion in COVID-19 relief and $1.4 trillion omnibus spending agreement, which was passed by the House on Monday evening and the Senate shortly after. Now it heads the president's desk, and now I'm going to ask you about that in just a moment. But your thoughts on that bill, there's a lot in there, Jerry.
You know, I get frustrated with what Washington, D.C. does. The House has a rule that says that they will not vote. You have 72 hours to read the bill. This is 5,500 pages long. This 5,500 pages long, they decided not to adhere to that rule. And so they had 6 hours to read 5,500 pages. Now, you can't tell me that any congressman knows everything that's in that bill. And as we start to sort through it now, it's not even 72 hours, 24 hours after we see what's in the bill. It's starting to become a little frustrating. Yeah, there's $900 billion relief. We should have some relief. Government told us to stay home. They told us to shut down our businesses, both and especially at the state level, and we're still seeing that today. So we need to do something to help those people that the government told to shut down. If you do the math, it's fascinating to me. There's 328 men, women, and children, 328 million people in Colorado. In the United States. A $900 billion stimulus means that each and every man, woman, and child has to pay $2,743 to pay for that stimulus, to pay for that $900 billion. Now, I'm not sure about you or me, but the $600 they're giving me is not even going to be close to that $2,743 that I'm eventually going to have to pay. The fascinating thing for me is, who all gets this money? And yes, there's some very good things in the bill, bill for businesses, bill or money for businesses, money for low-income housing, for education, all of those things to pay. Paycheck Protection Program, all of those things are very important. But there's a number of things here that I have to scratch my head about. For example, what do we got? $169, almost $170 million going to Vietnam. We got $198 million going to Bangladesh. $130 million to Nepal. Why are we using stimulus money to go to all of these different places, quite frankly, that it's probably not our responsibility to deal with? Now, there's some other things domestically. What the Smithsonian, I think, gets $1 billion out of that. The Kennedy Center gets, $26 million. and Humanities gets $167 million. I think, did I say the Kennedy Center, $26
million? Right.
It's challenging for me on what we are spending that kind of money on those type of places. You know, and I understand the arts is important, but during the shutdown, were there, you know, $26 million worth of performers that didn't get paid that went to the Kennedy Center? I'm struggling trying to add this all up and make sense of it. Do I think we need it? Yes. Do I think that we have overblown this stimulus package? Well, my first read of what I'm seeing in the summaries is we're setting my kids and grandkids up for a debt that they can't handle.
Yeah, there's a lot in there. The House and the Senate, as you mentioned, only had a few hours to read through that, and it was actually 5,593 pages long. The bill passed in the House on a 327-85 margin, and there were a few opposers. Congressman Ken Buck, in fact, here from Colorado. The Senate approved it on a 92-6 vote, and it does include the $600 per person direct checks, which is down from that CARES Act earlier this year, which was $1,200. And there's money in there for schools, coronavirus testing, and vaccine distribution. And, as you mentioned, there's a lot of Christmas presents, as it were, as Todd Starnes calls it, for foreign nations. And you just mentioned a few of them. You should see the entire list. You can check it out at toddstarnes.com. And the other thing is that I guess the biggest looming question now, and we've just touched on some of it, folks, there's a lot there. You need to go read it for yourself and see what's in there. Some good, a lot of bad. Will President Trump sign this $908 trillion spending bill? Because he has talked about vetoing it because of a portion in there about protecting the big tech companies.
Well, it's a very good question. I don't know, honestly, if the president will veto it. There's obviously, there would be huge political ramifications if he does veto it, but I couldn't blame him to veto this. I mean, this bill is loaded so much with pork, we're all going to get fat, quite frankly. And when I say fat, I mean fat in debt because of all the pork that's in here. And so I worry about it. Obviously, I never had a chance to read the bill. I'm not sure if I would have supported it or not. I know we need relief, but quite a bit of this going to foreign countries is not my idea of relief to the American taxpayer.
And on the Senate side, too, Rand Paul voted against it, too. That's a big name that voted that one down. Once again, my guest is Colorado State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg, and we've got a lot more to talk about besides that COVID relief bill that still now awaits President Trump's signature or veto. But boy, that vote on both the House and Senate, it could be veto-proof if it ends up going back. Some other national issues with Colorado impacts I wanted to get to. We had the Pfizer vaccines for COVID approved. Was it last week? And then the Moderna vaccines have been approved now by the FDA, and the vaccinations are happening across the nation and right here in the state. But there's some that are wondering about who is getting the vaccines first and who isn't, especially when you talk about rural parts of the nation and right here in Colorado. Your thoughts on all of that, Senator Sonnenberg?
Well, I think they had set up their priorities correct, where the frontline workers, nurses, doctors, EMTs, those first responders should be the first ones to get the vaccine. I'm not sure how that process is working, as I hadn't seen much lately. But then the older, more at risk people need to have it next. I don't know how long this will take to get those people that we truly need, that are at risk, to be immunized. but that needs to be accomplished. I don't know how much we're getting out in here in rural Colorado. Obviously, the focus has always been of this governor administration to take care of the most populated areas and not necessarily the rural areas. But I'm in hopes that the rural will see some of that.
Which brings me to my next question. Did you have a chance to check out the letter that was sent to Governor Polis from several, including the Carter Counties Incorporated, also the Cadre Hospital Association, and many of the hospital administrators to Governor Polis for striving for better and better continuous improvements to bolster the state's COVID-19 response? Because at the time of the letter, they had not heard from the governor at all or CDPHE, and they were concerned.
Well, and as I said, Dave, you know, when this governor focuses on his Denver Boulder constituency, the communication with this governor has been horrible, and it's been horrible with anybody that doesn't fit in his little circle, and that's unfortunate. Rightfully so, our rural communities, rural counties, rural hospitals are concerned on how it will be distributed, how things will work in rural Colorado, and I'm hoping that the governor will throw a few breadcrumbs out to the peasants in rural Colorado.
You can check out that letter to the governor from the Carter Counties Incorporated, as well as the Carter Hospital Association and many of the directors administration from those hospitals online inside the barn. And also, you can listen to the question I posed to Governor Polis and his response, what I would say is non-answer to the specific question, online inside the barn. Back to the national election concerns, you know, we talked about this now for 2 months. The presidential election still seems to be up in the air by some regards, although the majority right now is probably saying it's over. But boy, it all comes down to Georgia's race, which the ballots are being cast right now in early voting. But it comes to a culmination on January 5th.
Yeah, Georgia's going to be key. And this is a normal process. It should be explained that this is a normal runoff process for Georgia to see who the new two is, to see who the senators will be from that state. If Republicans win, there will be some checks and balances in Washington, D.C. If Democrats win those seats and the U.S. Senate turns to Democrat control, we as Americans should be worried about how we will function as a country and what we will do. If you think $2,743 that you're going to have to eventually pay for this stimulus package is a lot, wait till you see the new debt when spending comes forward with, if there's no checks and balances, if Democrats are in control of both the Congress, Senate, and the president's desk.
Yeah, the old saying, Katie, bar the door, comes to mind if that takes place. And then overall, the U.S. House, with all the turmoil and loss of Democratic seats in that last election, boy, Nancy Pelosi has her work cut out for her to be a reelected speaker. She's got some questions surrounding California Democrat and House Intelligence Committee Ranking Member Eric Swalwell. So do you think she'll be reelected in January? You think they got that locked up?
She has always been able to slither her way into wherever she needed to be, including, if you remember, 2 years ago, they had the votes to keep her from being speaker and have somebody else as speaker, and she was able to neutralize that. So that's interesting. And of course, you know, she was the one that said that, well, we have to pass the bill so we can find out what's in it. Maybe that's why they only had 6 hours to read the bill. They have to pass it, and now we're finding out what they actually voted on. You know, that type of leadership gives Washington, D.C. a bad name, and that's one of the reasons it's called the swamp.
You know, speaking of the U.S. House, Congresswoman-elect Lauren Boebert announced her senior congressional office staff and Senator Sonnenberg. There are several names on that list that you'll recognize and work with, including her chief of staff will be Jeff Small, Legislative Director Paige Agostin, District Director Clarice Navarro, who moves from FSA State Director to there, Communications Director Ben Goldie, Southern Colorado Regional Director Kathy Garcia, name folks will recognize the Western Slope from Action 22, and the Western Colorado Regional Director Hogan Peterson, Southwestern Colorado Regional Director Devin Camacho, and scheduler Jeannie Davidovich. Sorry about that. So any thoughts on who she's picked to head her office staff?
You know, Lauren has done a wonderful job of surrounding herself with good people that will help her make an immediate impact in Washington, D.C. Many of those people are from Senator Cory Gardner's office. So you have a good, solid team that understands how to do the work in Washington, D.C. Clarice Navarro, obviously from the USDA, and then before that, the U.S. or the Colorado House of Representatives. She has a great background in working with the federal government. So Congressman Boebert has done a great job of putting a team together so that she is ready to go to work in January. I'm proud of the work she's doing.
Look forward to visiting with her sometime down the road, and congratulations to all of those that are being moved over to her office staff. Of course, she'll be sworn in on January 3rd, and they'll all take their positions after that. I couldn't go without asking you about President-elect Joe Biden tapping Tom Vilsack to be the next, or return as Ag Secretary, because he had that position 4 years ago, but he did vacate that early, right after President Trump was elected.
Yeah, and I know Tom Vilsack. Actually, he lives in Colorado now, so a guy that actually I think was a good Secretary of Ag. I think he did a good job before. I think he will do a good job for us now. We know what we're getting with him as commissioner, so I'm somewhat optimistic about Belichick returning as Commissioner Ag. I'm anxious to see what happens and his thoughts. I'd love to talk with him, find out what his thoughts are with regard to the trade things that we have been able to accomplish, and if those will be monkeyed with, or if we'll leave our ag trade things alone where we've actually gotten better deals.
And he was over at the U.S. Dairy Export Council, and taking his spot once he becomes the next Ag Secretary will be Krista Harden, another name folks remember. She served as Deputy Ag Secretary years ago under the Obama administration. Speaking of staff changes, any in your office that you want to make mention of, Senator?
Well, I am excited, absolutely. The young lady that will run my office this year is none other than Dusty from Congressman Buck's office. I am so excited to have her in my office. She is one of my constituents, obviously, and excited to have her go to work for me and help me in my office.
Congratulations to Dusty Johnson, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I'm sorry. I just assumed everybody knew Dusty. So, yes, it's Dusty Johnson. That is correct.
You bet. Once again, my guest, Colorado State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg. Polis has extended his COVID mandates once again, masks, school and business restrictions. You guys tried to, during that special session, to get some legislation in to limit his powers. But in the meantime, he's extended the emergency declaration, transferred general fund monies into the COVID fund without state legislature approval once again. Any thoughts on that?
We continue to have a governor that is thirsting for power and continues to use any power he has to just basically do what he wants and whip everybody else into submission. We have seen him threaten restaurants, bars. It's interesting because the California Supreme Court struck down California's mandate that restaurants and bars had to close and be shut down to in-person dining. It's fascinating. frustrating because everybody knows that the Supreme Court in California is not a conservative court. It is definitely a left-leaning court, and they struck this down in a case that originated in San Diego. We will see, excuse me, and I will encourage restaurants in Colorado, and I'm willing to help them band together and do the same type of lawsuit. There has been no data, zero data that shows that COVID spreading is any more prevalent or any prevalent at all in restaurants or bars. Yet our governor is sending people from the Department of Revenue down to sit in front of these restaurants, hand out their business card, telling them, we will shut you down. You either shut down or we will shut you down. We will take your licenses away. That's not the way we do things in America. It's not the way we do things in Colorado. And quite honestly, if we're not going to base how we shut things down on science, then what are we doing? And we can go back to the national stimulus, and we can go back to the Colorado stimulus. Wouldn't it be better if we just put people back to work and quit trying to shut the entire economy down, allow local communities to determine what works best for them? I happened to come back, as you mentioned, I was hauling cattle yesterday, and I came back through from on Highway 14, and it was fascinating. Walmart parking lot was plumb full. Tell me how that makes sense. If you truly want to figure out where this could be spread, wouldn't you start with those big box stores that are packed full of people instead of the local mom-and-pop shops in these local communities? It's frustrating to see what this governor is doing, quite frankly. And then it's fascinating. We get letters from youth about what is happening with him shutting down sports, extracurricular activities, FFA, FBLA, all of those music programs, those type of things. Our governor and CDPHE is shutting down. And then it's interesting because, well, they get a little pressure and they decide to change their plan. Well, so are we basing it on science? If we're not basing it on science, if we're basing it on whims, then quit putting any of these restrictions on. It just baffles me that if you have a set date based on science, and then you get a little pressure and you move the date somewhere else, maybe it's not based on science. And quite honestly, from my perspective, we are seeing a deterioration of mental health in rural Colorado and probably along the I-25 corridor as well that is not being taken into account. So I'm frustrated at what Governor Polis is doing, what he has done with his executive orders and his thirst for power, and making sure that he continues to have that power.
And you mentioned the Colorado Department of Revenue Enforcement Division. You need to check out Morgan County Commissioner John Becker and former State Representative John Becker's Facebook page. He goes into pretty good detail about the gentleman that's going around dropping off business cards and threatening folks to lose their liquor license in the case of those bars and restaurants for there. But it's pretty serious. You know, I almost forgot to mention, it was announced this week by House and Senate leaders that the 2021 general session of the state legislature will now be delayed by 30 days. Was the Republican leadership in both chambers, Jerry, asked for their input on that decision, or was it just announced?
You know what? They were asked what they thought about it, and then all of a sudden, it's my understanding that leadership found out after reading the story in the newspaper that the session was delayed by 30 days. It goes again to the lack of communication and the power hungriness of, quite frankly, the Democrat leadership as well up there. I mean, they reached out and says, what do you think about this? That is my understanding. Then a week later, they read about it in the newspaper. paper. No heads up, say, hey, I think we're going to go this direction. Just wanted to let you know we're going to announce it. That didn't happen. We read about it in the paper, which is fine, quite honestly. It's become the norm, the lack of communication between Democrat leadership in the House and the Senate. We're just gnats holding up their progress, and there's no need for them to communicate with us at all. It probably doesn't change anything. We have a 30-day delay. We have to go in by Constitution before 10 o'clock before the second Wednesday of January. So we will go in at 10 o'clock on the second Wednesday of January. That's mandated by Constitution. We'll do some house cleaning stuff, I'm sure. I assume we'll stay in session on Thursday as well. That's when the governor gives his State of the State power address. And then I don't know if we'll come on Friday then and delay until, I believe, February 16th is what I heard. The session will still roll, probably be done in mid-June instead of mid-May. We'll see what happens. I don't anticipate a lot of things changing on the way bills are dealt with. And in hopes it may be a good thing if part of their plan is to delay it a month so people actually have access to the Capitol again and have access to the People's House, I can support that plan. I want people to be able to come in and testify and be a part of this government process. So I'm hoping that will happen. We'll see how it all pans out.
It's kind of ironic, though. You mentioned that they're following the Constitution in this regard, but they don't follow it in other regards. But hey, here's a silver lining. Maybe Colorado taxpayers will get a 30-day reprieve from having to pay any additional taxes or fees that will surely be passed through both chambers and sent to the governor's desk once the session does get underway. And as for the delayed upcoming legislative session, what bills are you working on right now, Jerry?
Well, as you know, we are limited to 5 bills. I have 5 that are kind of a priority right now, but I'm working. There's some other ideas that I think need to be dealt with depending on what happens here with the pandemic and the stimulus money. But the 5 bills that you can expect me to bring forward, we had talked about earlier, making it easier for farmers and ranchers, especially beef producers, to sell their products directly to the consumers. I have a bill that's modeled somewhat after Wyoming's bill to do that, working through a little few glitches, trying to get that accomplished. And then I've got a bill to deal with conservation easements again. We're going to narrow the scope on that, obviously working with the Gentz family here in Sterling, as well as Eric Glenn, to try and see if we can get something solved there. It'll be narrowed down a little bit this year. It's interesting, and nobody will care about this unless you work for a co-op. And right now, co-ops that want to provide health insurance to their employees have a limited source because of an old law on the books that said if you're an insurance company that wasn't in business before 1980, you can't provide insurance to co-ops. And so I'm going to try and change the date on that so they have more opportunities to be able to provide services to their employees. Then I've got one bill that's being drafted that deals with prohibiting the state from selling our information. As you may or may not know, Department of Revenue, when they collect your information for driver's licenses, those type of things, they sell that information. They sell that information to a profit for the state, but your information is then sold to somebody else. I want them to quit doing that. I don't think that's the role of the government to sell information to anybody else. So I have a bill to deal with that as well. And then we're finding out there's some issues with mandatory reporting of abuse and those type of things with youth that just simple little fixes that need dealt with. If there's a mandatory reporting by somebody, then all of a sudden a parent is bypassed or not brought into the conversation. I just want to make sure that kids are protected, as well as parents that are trying to do the right thing, or in this case where we have a problem is when we have parents that are taking care of kids that aren't their own. So foster parents, those type of things. So working through that now, I'm not sure we may be able to get that accomplished through without a bill, and if so, I'll bring something forward. But that's something that I'm trying to fix. It's just a couple of isolated incidents that foster parents have had in the mandatory reporting stuff.
Well, the big one you mentioned just a little while ago was the Department of Revenue selling our information off our driver's license. I did not know that, and I'll bet you a lot of people listening to us right now did not know that as well. So we hope that you do are able to carry that bill and get it passed and get it signed into law. My guest once again is Colorado State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg. You know, most of us, and I know you guys and your family as well, we're ready to see the calendar flip over to 2021. It's been a very tough year for farmers and ranchers and all of agriculture, and for that matter, everyone in the entire nation. Senator Sonnenberg, it goes without saying that mental health is something that many don't even want to discuss, but it's so very important. We check in with our loved ones and those family members that are near to us and dear to us and lend a hand whenever they are in need, which is including our neighbors. You know, suicides are up across the state, not just in adults, unfortunately, but young people are making this tragic and final decision. Well, anything you wanted to mention in that regard, and also talk about the help that's available at Colorado Crisis Services?
You know, and we have talked about this before, I continue to harp on making sure that your neighbors are doing good, making sure, checking in on your family. This is a depressing time when you're cooped up at home, when you can't work, when you can't provide for your family, and then for our youths who are cooped up and don't have that social interaction. And as we talked a little earlier, there were a couple of letters to the governor from students asking for help, asking to take into consideration, you know, what is happening to the mental health, especially in our rural communities. I can't urge enough for people to check in on others and make sure that they are doing okay and that they don't need anything and that they know people care about them, so that with this pandemic and the situation we're in now doesn't cause more harm than we're already seeing.
And for those ag producers or anyone for that matter needing help here in the state of Colorado, when you don't know where to start, you can start with Colorado Crisis Services. The number is 844-493-TALK. That's 1-844-493-8255. Or you can simply text the word TALK, T-A-L-K, to 38255, or visit ColoradoCrisisServices.org. There's information online inside the barn, and I'm doing the best I can, Senator, to get the word out on every report that I put out there. We've had a tragedy that affected our community, and suicide is not an option. It's so final. You can't do anything to help that person after. So please reach out.
Well, you're exactly right. And unfortunately, when someone feels that their only way out is to take their own life, they don't think about the impacts that it has to an entire community and the rest of their family. And that's tough. When you reach that level, and I assume I haven't reached that level, but when you reach that level, I can only assume that the pressure on you is so great that you just want it to end. And that's why we need to reach up and make sure everybody's doing okay, that make sure that they understand that there are people that care and love them and are willing to do whatever they need to do to be helpful to them.
And I didn't want to end this interview or this month's interview on a somber note, but just please reach out if you need help. There's a lot of people that want to help you. Don't ever think that you're alone. And I know this is the holiday season. It's also stressful times, but it's also a beautiful season as we remember the birth of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Anything you want to mention about Christmas or even the New Year's, which is just around the corner?
You know, we are close to thumbing our nose at 2020, and I'm ready for that. And you are exactly right. This Christmas and New Year's holiday portion where we have an opportunity to spend some time with our families, think about all of those things that we give thanks for, the blessings that we have. And the truth is, we can talk about all the negative things that are happening, but I am so blessed by the family that I have. I am so blessed that I get to do what I do by farming and ranching, taking care of the animals, taking care of the land. And then I'm also blessed to be able to be that spokesperson for rural Colorado and agriculture. Every one of us have things to be thankful for. And we are all truly blessed. If we look at the glass half full, things can only get better, and we are honored to live in a country that God has placed us here that is truly free, and that we are able to do the things, worship the way we want, go where we want, do those things. And so when it comes right down to it, we are truly blessed, and I'm thankful God has placed me in the situation that I am in.
Well, thank you for all that you do for Colorado's agriculture. State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg, and also Merry Christmas and Happy New Year from my family and all of the sponsors here at the barn to you and your family. You are very much appreciated, sir.
Well, I appreciate that very much. And Brian, I appreciate what you do for rural Colorado, actually more than rural Colorado. Your radio broadcasts are heard in other states as well, and I appreciate what you do getting our message out, being an advocate for agriculture. And I want to wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, as well as all of your loyal listeners and those people that will hear this.
State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg represents District 1 in the Senate, and represents the counties of Cheyenne, Elbert, Lincoln, Logan, Kit Carson, Morgan, Phillips, Sedgwick, Yuma, Washington, and Weld. You can learn more online at electsonnenberg.com, and you can check out his op-ed, both written and audio form, when he puts them out on a regular basis, right here online to the barn of barnmedia.net.